Looking at Beatrix Potter on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books.
And I'm Don Wooten. Gloria Burlingame has an interest in Peter Rabbit and his creator. We'll meet her today on Scribble. I don't know why I always tread on your line that I'm Roll Tweet.
Well, but you're not.
Okay. I'm trying to cover up the fact that you're here. But Gloria Burlingame, I must say, you're teaching a course in the middle of this now at Comm University, and it has to do with Beatrix Potter. You are an artist. Are you interested in her as an illustrator, or do you take an equal interest in her writing?
I would say, Don, I was attracted to her drawings. I'm an art teacher, got a teaching degree here at Augustana years ago, and I've been doing a lot of teaching for very many years. And so I'm a picture person, I'm a visual person, because I'm an artist as well. And so I was attracted to the drawings. Not to say that her writing is not good. The stories are wonderful. They have a good moral. I think they're great for children as well as adults.
Well, when you decided to teach a course at Comm University, what was the angle? Was it just letting people know about her illustrations? Did you want them to draw too, or what?
We do a little bit of both, Don. I started in 2010, so I've been with the program for about 10 years. So glad that Blackhawk College has continued to pick this up. People enjoy this. So I've also been teaching at the Rock Island Library for 20-some years, their summer program for children, and I've almost always tried to incorporate literature or books into what I'm doing. So I was attracted to, well, I first started out with Georgia O'Keeffe the first year, Frida Kahlo, Mary Cassatt. I was interested in doing women artists that people would recognize. To me, those are the three biggies. And after that, I thought, oh, I've got to come up with somebody else. Who's it going to be? I have a sister who lives in England. She has daughters. They had the books. We had a China tea set that was sent to my daughter when she was little. And I really started picking up on how well done the drawings are. And after reading about her life and how she came to be able to draw so proficiently, I thought this would be a great person to do a class about.
Gloria, describe well done. I think that's an interesting phrase.
Well, I don't know if you know a lot about her life. She was a lonely child. She spent much of her lifetime in the third floor of the home. The parents were socialites. Children were not seen and hardly ever heard. But in this third floor nursery, I guess you would call it, where she spent most of her life with her governess, they had a menagerie. They had Bertram, her brother, had a bat. They had a frog named Punch, rabbits, salamanders. They bought a ring snake, whatever that is. They bought
that. Oh, I know ring snakes.
Yes.
Great.
Oh, really? Oh, good for you.
Yeah, snakes are not. A little snake about 10 inches long with a little yellow band around their neck.
Having watched my mom hack to death a garter snake in her garden while she was screaming, I'm going to blame her for my fear of snakes. But as far as her proficiency in drawing, they not only tamed these animals and raised them and drew them, after the animals died, they would boil them. Can you imagine two children and hopefully the governess boiling the animals down to get to the skeletal structure and then drawing from that? And that, along with, I was privileged to know and to draw with a retired art teacher, Jan Roram. She's no longer with us, sadly. But her key phrase was, look more, draw less. And I use that with my students. It's observation. So, long answer to your question, but she was very observant. Her brother also drew a bit, but it was mainly Beatrix.
Oh, my. But how do you deal with this in class? Do you look at things or do you draw things?
Some of both. About the first hour, I talk about a timeline as much as the first hour will allow me to do. And yesterday was the first class. And because many of the people or some of the people have never drawn before, I don't want to frighten people. I know the first year I did something like this, and I said, and now we're going to draw. I had a few people who looked like deer in headlights saying, you mean we have to make something? And I said, no, but you're going to want to make something. So yesterday, we actually started out with mushrooms. She was a very proficient mycologist. She did studies herself, wrote a paper on it, which wasn't accepted at the time because that was a male realm. But now many of her ideas have been proven to be true. And so she did these wonderful botanical studies of mushrooms. And she enjoyed summers where she could explore the area where her family was staying and actually collect specimens and take them home and draw them. She finally got out into the fresh air. So yesterday, I covered that part of her life. And then I wanted the true dip pen experience, which was quite interesting. If you look at what used to be my fingernails, you can see what happened yesterday. Thank goodness for Bill Hannon, whom I contacted about various things about dip pens because I hadn't used them in years. So everybody had a little pot of ink. They had, I have fake mushrooms, so I set up a little still life. And first they did contour drawings of fake mushrooms. And then we moved to the studies, and we only got as far as this, one of her drawings. And they experimented with pen and ink for the last half hour.
I should mention at this point that we're recording this. You're actually near the end of your course by the time this airs.
I'm a talker. Oh, you mean the actual program?
Yesterday was 2 or 3 weeks ago.
I see. Well, the subsequent classes next week, then I will get into the publishing of her books. Everybody in the class I've made a portfolio for. I want them to feel like artists, so everybody gets this little Beatrix Potter portfolio. And they all have paper. They have information about Beatrix. But I thought, again, with so few people perhaps having drawn before, mushrooms have a very simplistic shape. And then next week we will talk about the animals that she drew, and I'll show them how to break down the figure into shapes, because everything has a shape.
Did she have any formal training in drawing, writing? In
drawing, all young girls were supposed to know how to do needlepoint embroidery and watercolor painting. So she did have some teachers. Her third teacher she didn't get on well with because she had totally separate ideas.
And this would be about the age what?
Approaching her 20s, I would say.
Okay.
She didn't have a tutor after the age of 20. And so, I take that back. She had a woman come in to teach her German. But as far as art programming, and I hope I'm remembering correctly, up until the age of 20, she might have had a teacher who worked with her. But after that age, she continued on her own.
But she became quite accomplished. I've seen the drawings in Peter Rabbit, which are fairly simple.
They are, but they structurally, are well done. And I think that has to do with when I teach drawing classes to adults, we generally begin with a skull if we're going to do a face. Because like building a house, you've got to have the structure before you can add the walls and add the siding and all those things. So I like to start at the beginning and then flesh it out a bit. So we will be doing sketches next week, just very, very basic things of the animal shapes, and then progress to something more complete.
Mm-hmm. But what is the objective here? Is it to acquaint people with Beatrix Potter? Is it to let them know that there is more to her than Peter Rabbit? Is it to get them to become artists at some level? What exactly is the purpose?
Short answer, yes, yes, and yes.
Oh, I see. I'm glad I asked that.
I want them to know about her life. As my husband can tell you, when I teach a class, I become obsessed with research. I have a mound of books. I get everything I can from every source, and then I have to pare it down. I generally have too much information. So I wanted them to have a timeline of her life and throw in some anecdotal things about her to make her seem more human to people. Then I want them to see perhaps her struggle with the pen, and it was a bit of a struggle yesterday. We're so used to picking up an ink pen and you just begin writing. Not so with these. The points have to be dipped in soapy water first. You have to have a little thing of rubbing alcohol if they clog up. You can't press too hard. You could snap the nib, that kind of thing. But I'm glad to say at the end of class, and I have a class of one person wasn't able to be there. I believe 10 were there yesterday. They all were enjoying it. If I hear people sighing or making faces, I know it's time to try to intercede. But they got an idea of what they were doing, and several, it sounded as if that they would be buying one of these little pens, they're not expensive, and perhaps pursuing it. And that is my goal. I'll get on my soapbox for just a minute. And my way of thinking as an art teacher is, if kids don't have art classes, and sadly, I don't know if you know, but here in Rock Island, there are no art teachers in the schools. If they don't start out with it, how are they supposed to appreciate art when they're an adult? And I teach at the Figge some programs called Wine and Art. It does involve a little bit of wine.
Where do I sign up?
I don't advocate drinking excessively when you're doing art, because you can really screw up a drawing. But I'm finding, or I've come to the conclusion more and more, that many adults didn't get a chance to cut and paste, finger paint, do those things, because it's almost, well, I'm starting to devise projects that I did with children and creating them to be used with adults, and people love that thing. They didn't get a chance to be messy, maybe as a kid, but they seem to enjoy those kind of projects. So I wanted them to know a bit about Beatrix Potter, explore some of her materials, and perhaps develop an interest in doing some art on their own, because it's very relaxing. Once you get past the initial frustration of using a dip pen, the more I watched people, the more they were developing these drawings, and I stand back and don't interfere if it's going well. So, and it was.
Let's talk about Beatrice and her artwork. You have some paintings here that these were
early pieces.
Early pieces, but yes. They go well beyond Peter Rabbit.
They do. She was judged to be exceptional in what she did at that time, or very good, and that's why the parents had an art teacher come in. She won a prize. I don't know if she won a prize for this one. The criticism of these pieces by art critics are they don't have the joy, they don't have the spontaneity of the animal pictures. But my motto...
Well, they're fruit. How could they?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And with any beginning artists, I say learn the classics and play jazz. And so that's my theory in creating art with students.
I want to come back for a minute to a statement. I thought maybe you would stop Wooten in his tracks when he said, beyond Peter Rabbit. Do you agree with that? I mean, this is real art and Peter Rabbit is just kids' drawings? Or
no. It's personal, isn't it? Art is subjective.
Well, there's got to be something. I mean, I grew up with Peter Rabbit.
Yes.
And all those stories and stuff. There have to have been hundreds of books using animals about kids. But there must be something about her ability to draw an animal. I mean, Peter Rabbit is not drawn realistically. What do you think? I mean, in other words, I'm saying those may be just as sophisticated as these paintings of fruit.
Yes. And when you say they're not realistic, the animals themselves are realistic, but she didn't want to fall into drawing only brown things. I'm paraphrasing what she said. So she started giving them clothing. But anatomically speaking, the animals are very well drawn. Now, they're not everybody's cup of tea. I mean, in this world, you know, there's all kinds of art. But these have stood the test of time, both in terms of the illustrations and the stories. They're good. They're for children. They're small books for little hands. You can safely give any of these books to any child and, I would think, not give them nightmares. And you can point things out in the pictures, all the details. I didn't bring any of her books, but Peter Rabbit, in this case, he's standing with a carrot. There's the shovel, Mr. McGregor's shovel. So they're very well drawn. If they weren't, the jacket would look awkward. It's very well done in that picture.
But these animals stand on their hind feet.
They do, because she's given them human characteristics.
Uh-huh. So, you know, she's taken some liberties with nature.
She has, but again, anatomically speaking, if you could get a rabbit to stand on its feet, they would look like she has painted them.
That would be interesting to see because of the way those bones are set. You know, the ankle bone is halfway up for them.
Yes, it would be awkward. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll agree, she probably took some liberties. I have not personally studied. My husband can attest to all the animal skulls that I have. I get very excited when I see another skull available, and he'll say, what are you going to do with it? But I don't have the full structure. So if I were to study that, I would see what you are saying.
Uh-huh. But, you know, believe me, I'm all for letting your imagination run free.
I am too. And yes, again, learn the classics and then play jazz.
But do you spend time showing them these later artworks of hers and explaining them and trying to get them to think beyond Peter Rabbit?
I will a bit, perhaps not to a great extent, because I only have an hour for the art part. And I explain up front that this is a class where you're going to experiment with supplies. If you want to learn something more technical, sign up for one of my classes at the Figgy. Shameful plug. But when I go into Rock Island Schools, which I did quite a bit for a while, I'm kind of running out of energy these days, but they would say, is 30 minutes long enough or 40 minutes long enough? And I wanted to say, no, it's not. Well, I would say I've got to have at least 45 between setup and cleanup. It's like dangling a carrot in front of Peter Rabbit with kids, mm-hmm. where we're going to do some art, but hey, it's time to do something else right now, and it's got to be frustrating to kids. So I want the adults to get an idea a bit about what we're doing. If they have questions, I'm happy to explain a bit more in depth, but an hour is not much time. I see this class as a time for them to experiment with the materials, and we're using pen and ink, we're using watercolor. Beatrix Potter did not use water-soluble colored pencils. However, we're doing that next week as a lead into painting, because once the ink, the India ink, dries, then we want to colorize some things. And I thought I would start with colored pencils first, which are more controllable, and then go into watercolors the following week.
Are you using Beatrix Potter as a crutch just to get people to draw?
I will use anything I can, Don. If people could realize, well, and studies have been done that children, adults, drawing frees up the mind. You're using other portions of the brain that you perhaps don't use. It can be relaxing. Kids can learn more if they have art. The kids that I would have in the classroom at the public schools, there would be one or two sitting away from the rest, and I thought, oh, here's the problem, kid. That's the kid that often shined at the art, with the art. And it made me feel a bit sad to think that, okay, academically they're not doing as well, but at least there's something they can do to prove themselves.
What do you think happens to kids under the systems as we currently have it? Because it seems to me, looking at our own kids and our grandkids, that almost kids are born wanting to write and wanting to draw, wanting to paint. And at some point, they love poetry, for instance, and scribbling on pictures of, and then at some point, by the time they get to sixth grade or junior high, they're afraid of it, or they don't like it anymore, or they're threatened by it.
Peer pressure, kids, other kids saying that's terrible. Why do you think you should draw like that? That's a bad one.
Mm-hmm. Well, my problem is everybody in my family is talented at drawing except me.
Oh, come to my class.
tottering into your class at my ages.
I had a wonderful student named Bob Getzman, who was a retired dentist. He's since left us, but he was wonderful. He'd never drawn before, and he wanted to always draw, and he kept drawing very tiny. And I said, you could try making it bigger, but I said, I think I know, Bob, why you're drawing so small. He said, I'm so sorry, Gloria. I'll try to do better. I said, I think you've been working in the parameters of people's mouths for so long. So the next week, instead of a 2-inch drawing, he went to maybe a 3.5 or a 4. Wonderful man, though. But I've had police officers, social workers, nurses, the dentist, people from all walks of life, and some will say when they walk in, I can't draw. And I said, oh, yes, you can. You will see.
I've often thought it would be nice to be able to do caricatures, to do political cartooning.
Those are tricky.
Yeah, those are. Those really are. And it's interesting when I look at comic artists to see the degree of skill. Some of them are very simple. You think of Rhymes with Orange and little stick figures and so on. And then you look at somebody like Watterson, who could do almost anything. And also, look at, what's his name? He started out in college with Doonesbury.
Oh, yeah.
Very crude.
Yes.
Gary Trudeau.
Yes, Gary Trudeau,
yeah.
Yes.
And then he took art, then he took drawing lessons, and suddenly it's a different Doonesbury.
You probably know that Gary Burlingame used to facilitate the life drawing at the museum. And several years ago, and I can't remember the man's name, but he draws, I don't know if you're supposed to call them cartoons, that sounds diminishing, graphic novels. Someone from Muscatine, I can't remember the name. We were all, the rest of us in the group, were in awe of what he was doing. He was looking at what we were doing because ours were proportionate. His were exaggerated in places. So grass is always greener kind of thing. But he wanted to do life drawing for a while to improve his cartooning. Mm-hmm. So you've got to learn the structure before you can effectively do a decent cartoon, is my way of thinking.
Well, I tell you, Gloria, I appreciate your invitation, and I don't know how fast I'll be to snap it up, but I'm awfully glad that you're doing this class at Comm University. And I assume that as they go forward, you will continue as well.
I hope so. If I have enough energy, Don, I certainly will. I already have some ideas perhaps for next year, so time will tell, won't it?
Yeah, that's the key thing, energy, isn't it?
Thank you so much for inviting me to do this and giving a great plug for Comm University. I hope it continues on. It's a wonderful program.
Oh, and so. The Figgy.
And the Figgy,
Yeah, but we want to thank you, Gloria Burlingame, for spending time here with us on Scribble.
You're very welcome. Thank you both.
So, Roel, do you do any drawing?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, your skills just multiply every time we talk.
I took art. I took art whenever I could in school. But I never progressed to the point where I was, I would describe myself as a super great author.
But well, you're a wood sculptor.
I'm a sculptor. I whittle.
Yeah.
I don't carve.
Well, I don't know how you do it, but you produce things made of wood.
Yes, I do.
as works of art.
They are whittlings. They may be works of art, but they're whittlings.
How about the art of book reviewing? Are you?
I have been dying for several weeks to tell you about a book that Peter Kivistow passed on to me. It's called The Cockroach, and it's by Ian McEwan, the author of Atonement, who won the National Book Circle Critics Award 5 or 6 years ago. He's got 15 or 16 books out. He's good. But this is the funniest book I've read in some time, and it came during all those dark days of December when I really needed a laugh. This is a takeoff on The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. It's a short, it's a novella, 100 pages. In this book, a cockroach in England, in London, wakes up one morning to discover that he's been transformed into a human body. The reverse of Kafka. And all he has is four limbs. How am I going to live with four limbs? And he has an internal skeleton. How is that going to work? You know, my flesh is exposed. His tongue takes up his whole mouth, and it's very awkward. His head is so big on this little skinny neck. It turns out he's not just any human body. He's the Prime Minister of England. You might think Boris Johnson and Brexit this whole thing.
Immediately.
So he goes to his cabinet, and he discovers that his entire cabinet is also cockroaches that have been transformed. They proceed to carry out the Labour Party agenda. He never mentions the word Brexit, but...
Well, now, Boris is a Tory.
Or a Tory, excuse me. Yeah. But anyway, they are pushing an agenda called reversalism, in which... the money that usually flows clockwise, you know, from the worker to the store and so forth, but they want to put the money in reverse. So that, for example, you go to work, and the more important your job, the more you have to pay for it. And if you want a really good job, it's very expensive. Well, where do you get the money? Well, you go to the store and shop. And every time you buy something, the storekeeper gives you money. Right? And the storekeeper gets his money from the people that supply him with the goods. And the money, of course, reverses. And it goes around and around and around. Absolutely perfect sense. And so...
Sounds good to me.
Well, and they get it passed. At the end of the story, I don't want to give you the end of the story, but if you want a good laugh at Brexit and the kind of silliness that's going on there, read The Cockroach. It's a great read. It's funny. You'll just laugh your head off.
Well, I have another book that's also funny. It's by Dave Barry, a humor columnist who got the Pulitzer Prize for his work in the Miami Herald. I guess he retired from that after about 21 years and spends his time writing books, novels, and collections of essays. And quite frankly, he's just kind of tossing these things off right now. I read one called Best State Ever, a little tour through some of the quirky places in Florida. He contends that Florida has problems with weird people, but they all come from other states. And the further they go into Florida, the weirder they get. So by the time they get down to Key West, there's where the really weird people live. And he takes you on a tour of some places like Wikiwachi, which is a place that was built by a man who could hold his water, they said, 8 minutes underwater. And he did some advisory work in Hollywood, and he decided to set up the spectacle in a little town in Florida, built a big tank with a viewing area where people could come sit and watch these mermaids. And he would train girls to stay underwater. They had a hose they could use to take in fresh air and expel it as bubbles. And they were dressed in suits to look like mermaids. And they cavorted around in this water, and that was a big tourist attraction. It's still going, but as he points out here and in several other places, Disney has eaten up all the tourist business. So all these quirky little places are kind of neglected. He goes to a town that has a haunted hotel. He goes to the Everglades. He goes to an interesting place called the Villages. And there are about three different settlements. All the houses look pretty much alike. There are only two shades of paint. And they're all occupied by elderly people, mostly white. And they are there to have fun. There are all kinds of stories about racy things that happen there. But what he saw was a lot of line dancing and golf and things of that sort. So he did not think that it was a very racy place at all. But then when he went down to Key West, yes, he took a friend with him and they visited the various flesh pots. And what they mostly did, I think, was drink beer. I don't think it's one of his greatest books, but it's typical Dave Barry kind of sophomoric humor. And if you like him, you will like Best State Ever, a tribute to the state of Florida. And with that, I think we've about used up our time. But I'm Roll Tweet. No, you're Roll Tweet.
Yes.
I'm Don Wood. Sometimes we just change identities.
I know it.
Whoever we are, we'll be back next week for another session of Scribble and hope you will join us.